that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yuck Mala, Yuck Mala. Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am super happy to be with you today to talk about Season 13, Days of Future Past. And joining me in the future, or the past, whichever one it is my good friends. And my friends are James Cotta.
I am thrilled to join you here in the future, because that's where we will spend the rest of our lives, in the future. That's
in the future, exactly.
You know, it's now the future from when you said that. Did you know that?
Yeah. It's dark and apocalyptic, as I had predicted. Until you get to the end of the show. My predictions for that.
Well, you've heard Mr. Jack Hall.
I'd like to be known from now on as Sir Jack Hall.
Sir Jack. Mm-hmm. All right.
Sir Jack Hall.
And finally, of course, we have Nick Boxer.
Just a second, picking my nose. Okay, I'm ready. Greetings and salutations.
Perfect. And the movie
is
that we are...
Is that what you thought about the movie?
No, I like this movie.
Well, that movie is Dead End Drive-In. So, and now we get to listen to Nick talk about Dead End Drive-In.
All righty. This one's by the numbers, eh? In the far-off future, when the economy collapses, the government of Australia, I believe, decides that the smart thing to do is to... trick their populace, or their low income populace, so they don't cause any trouble, to trap them in drive-ins for some reason. Krabs, our hero, unique name for the movie, goes on a date with this girl Carmen, borrows his brother's car, they go to the drive-in, and mysteriously some cops steal his wheels. Dun, dun, dun. Well, and it turns out if you can't drive out, you're not allowed to leave the drive-in, because, you know, that's the logical thing. I don't know.
Well, you can't walk on the highway.
You can't walk on the highway, right? That's the rules. So they just live there. That's a rule now, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's just a rule now.
It's sort of dangerous.
So, you know, they're just sort of stranded there. They can't do anything. They're given like a little living allowance. You can get food at the little cafe there, and everything's all mysterious. And after a couple days, Carmen starts to, you know, like living in the car. And, you know, it's not challenging. They don't really have to do anything. They go to the hairdressing spot outside of the laundromat area, and you know, the boys all sort of bugger each other in the bathrooms and stuff, and the whole thing's sort of an allegory for consumer culture, I think. And then a whole busload of Chinese immigrants get trapped in the drive-in too, and there's race relations stuff. But no, Krabs really wants to get out. It's tough to tell with all the accents. So he keeps trying to get out, and then finally he does or doesn't. It doesn't really matter. It's a fun movie, though.
He does get out. It sort of does matter.
Yeah, I did. I sort of chickened out because I didn't want to actually spoil the movie.
Oh. Since when are we worried about that?
Why? Yeah, I didn't think that went all the way through.
I feel like we should tell the listeners that what by the police steal his wheels, they don't mean his car. We don't mean his
two wheels.
Literally two of his wheels. Yeah, two tires off of the Australians, tires with a Y.
Tires with a Y, exactly. Yes.
Yes. Make sure you pronounce it that way through the whole episode. Yeah. she wants to live in the back of this this car. It is surprisingly roomy. the first sex scene that they have in the back of this car while they're at the drive-in, I'm like, did they take the front seats out? Like how big is this back seat? I mean, it's an old American car, but still. back of a van.
Yeah, it did seem like they dropped the front seats down so that you know, and perhaps in a 56 Chevy it could do that. Maybe it would have been a bench seat. So I mean, bench front. So I mean, maybe the front just goes all the way down and forms into somewhat of a bed.
Oh, something was going all the way down in this movie. I don't know if it was a seat, but
there's a weird sexual flow through this film, because like the tires get stolen while they're having sex in the back of this car in the like flatbed, I guess, that a 56 Chevy has, but then as the film goes on, as he gets less she gets more resigned to staying at the drive-in, and he's still wants to get out, still trying to find a way out, there becomes this recurring thing about how they're not having sex, and everyone around knows that. And like they start making jokes about him not having sex, he can't satisfy her, and it's a weird thread that goes through this.
Well, the whole thing, the whole movie, is they're like thinking that they're married. You know, like everybody in there apparently is married except for these two.
Yeah, there's Nick hit on like what is the actual subtext? What is the message of this movie? And I feel like there is one.
Oh, absolutely. But I can't
quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think they were confused too, because, and I think this is the problem where it even comes down to the racism part. It was like they felt like that subtext that they were getting earlier wasn't quite solid enough for their thoughts, so they were like, we really need to make sure that we hammer the subtext of this movie home. Let's add racism as part of the subtext.
Well, yeah, because the thing is, it's based on a short story, and they were trying to make this movie for a while. It had three drafts, and Brian Trenchard-Smith, who came in and directed it, he only got the movie a week before it started. He like took those three drafts, took the best elements, and then he added his own subtext to make it more political. And I don't know what subtext he added, but there it is.
Because, basically they're resigned to a really crappy existence where they're living in old cars and are given enough to survive on. They're given coupons for the cafe across the street where you can get enough food. And then the immigrants come in, and it's like they're here to take our non-existent jobs and take up space in our shitty life. How dare they?
Well, yeah.
This film
not to mention they're going to start raping everybody immediately.
That's right. Yeah, that one really echoed with our current times, that they're here to start the raping. Yeah.
Trump is set in 1995.
Right at home in that crowd.
It's set in 1995. So one of the things that this film doesn't feature, it is a dystopian future, but it doesn't feature the crazy special effects. Like it doesn't feature lasers for no reason or things like that. So it was 9 years in the future from when the film was released. So I don't know. I it's like not as I think that just the fact that it's not like the concept is like that makes no sense. The concept makes no sense when you describe it. Basically, if you show up at this drive-in, you stay forever, and they're hoping that you're social outcast because who else would go to a drive-in? Like well, that's
no. Here's like it's an odd thing, right? Because I kind of had to read the Wikipedia to help me out a little bit. Okay. And so it says in there that Krabs at some point says that he doesn't have a job to the manager. And so I think that that's kind of the clincher. Oh, it's just like, oh, he doesn't have a job. We better keep him here. But that's suggests... right, because
he's asking him about this stuff. No, that's after.
Right.
His tires were
sold. They pay the cheaper rate to get in for unemployed.
Mm.
Because it was $20... or right. Four if you were unemployed.
But
well, and there's also, yeah, I mean, there's a bit of this, like, the innocent, like, once you're on welfare, like the welfare state, you can't escape part, because once you're in there, you're given enough food, you're sort of sheltered, there's kind of a community formed, and this guy, the guy who runs the drive-in, is paid per person that's in there, mm-hmm. so it's in his best interest to keep them. There is a point at which we'll have thought of this more than the director. So,
yeah. Well, yeah.
But I like that. Well, I see.
I don't
see
know about that.
Pieces there. I see some pieces there of a comment on, you know, how you can't escape this once they're in it.
It's just weird because you would think that somebody would figure out, like, you know, nobody comes back from the drive-in. What up with that? Like, it's just. Like, why would you go to the drive-in?
Well, the brother of Krabs seems to have some sort of clue. Because doesn't he tell him don't go to the drive-in? It's a bad place.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember enough of the opening of the movie. I do kind of think that I missed about the first 20 minutes while I was watching it, despite the fact that I was watching
it. It definitely did not take 20 minutes to get in there. That's one good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, and you know, that's the thing, right? Like, this is... It's not a bad movie by any stretch. It's an interesting movie to watch. It's just one of those cases where, like, I think at the end, you're left with way more questions than you are actual answers.
Yeah, well, it's one of the movies that's hoping you can figure things out for yourself. That way they wouldn't have to.
Yeah. If you fill in our blanks for us, that would be great, because then we don't have to bother with that.
Any of our audience are doing a film studies class, I would say this is one that there will be no academic work on. And there's plenty there that you can build from.
Oh, that's right. No question about that. You could turn this into well nigh anything you felt like.
That's true. That's true. Make yourself a little essay. Oh, well, it sounds to me like we should probably get to the scoring. It seems early. I mean, we've been talking about this long, but I don't know what else there is to go over on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about the movie per se, because there he is. Krabs and his girlfriend are stuck in the drive-in. Krabs spends 70% of the movie trying to escape from the drive-in.
I think that as I watch it, the thing is, Krabs, he's Cool Aunt Luke. That's what he is. He's the guy who's in this. He's Cool Aunt Luke. He just won't. He's the one guy who just won't conform to what they are in the prison, right? So what we have here is a failure to communicate, and he needs to get out, and he needs to escape. So that's essentially it. The character is you have all this dystopian future and different concepts, and then the character himself boils down to that character that we've seen before.
Well, deep.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It makes sense. Let's go with that.
All right. Okay. I really have nothing to say. All right.
Well, let's
head into scoring. The conversation killer.
That's one of those times where it's just like, yeah, that sounds like the thing we'll go with.
Yeah, it's like you actually said something that made really good sense. That does kill a conversation on this podcast.
That's a thinker. That's what that is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's taken 13 seasons to get one.
All right. I look forward to the midpoint of season 26. In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in 5 categories. None of those categories is objective quality. The first category is called schlock appeal, and Stan starts us off.
It's an interesting one because, I mean, it's of course, it's so the 80s. I mean, it's like the new wave and the drugs and like the punk and all the crazy stuff. And I mean, the fact that it's Australian makes it even a little crazier, but it's super 80s. So that kind of gives it a schlock appeal from, you know, when we watch it now. But at the same time, I think because it's supposed to be social commentary in its own way, then that kind of reduces the schlock for me. So I'm going to go right down the middle with a 5.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. The actual thinking does decrease its score a little bit. But I have to go higher because, well, it does have Dead and Drive-In in the title. So that ups it a little bit. It has a cool car. That ups it a little bit. And, I mean, this is it's an insane concept, so that ups it a little bit. So I'm going with a 7.
I'm also going to give it a 7. I like that score. I think both of you, what you guys said, have total merit for judging this film. Definitely. It's got a level of schlock while also not being super boogaloo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's got a level of schlock that's just associated with the type of movie it is. But it's not, and I really did enjoy watching it. Like, as far as like a film that I enjoyed, oh yeah, it's up there. So a 7 for me.
I'll split down the middle and say a 6. I think it's got some of the elements. And I think the first 20 minutes of, you know, like the wrecker and like, you know, where they're salvaging cars was kind of the schlocky part. And then there's a lot of sitting around talking for a long time. that said, like I actually took very few notes on this movie because I did find I was watching it, which is, you know, an odd thing for this guy, for what we're doing. Next category is more heart than budget. Did we get a reported budget number on this bad boy?
Yeah, it's the equivalent of about $1.7 million US at the time. So 2.5 million Australian in the mid 80s. So
that seems like a lot of money for basically one set, ultimately. One, I mean, don't get me wrong. Now, that set deck within there is amazing. I mean, like, all, like, bringing in all the cars and just the you know, the way that they dressed up the drive-in is absolutely incredible. And I think there's no doubt, like, the, you know, the actors are in it. And I mean, it is a good movie in its own way. Like, it's trying really hard to be something. And I'll give it a 7.
These actors, they believed that they were the next big thing. This was Mad Max 2 to them. It just, you know, they knew this was going to be huge despite this absolutely ridiculous premise. And I mean, even today, if you listen to an interview with Brian Trenchard-Smith, he speaks fondly of this movie and it was a serious attempt. So yeah, I think there's a ton of heart. Budget's a little bit high, but it was the 80s, tax shelter money. I'll go with a 7.
Yeah, that definitely is a big budget for Australian film at the time, actually. I mean, this film was nominated for, you know, like, set design and stuff like that, the Australian Film Awards, things like that. I mean, it's not a big, huge budget, but it's not a small budget either. It's mid-level. So for me, what's really impressive, I do think it's a really genuine movie. I think it has genuine performances. I think they're generally trying to do something. They just don't know what 100% of the time. The set designs are fantastic. I love also the character designs. I think those are fantastic. So I got a 7.
I will agree with all of that, but give it a minus 1 because Nick always gives things a minus 1 for no reason. So 6 for me.
This is true.
What the fuck moments?
This one's a hard one for me. I didn't actually take any notes from this movie as I would normally, you know, take something, especially just to remember what the fuck moments. You know, there was a few elements. I mean, in the early going, I got really excited because, I mean, like, Krabs is out jogging, and then the next thing you know, you've got this car with the crazy, crazy punk, post-apocalyptic punks that has a flamethrower on it, and I was just like, oh, this movie looks like it's going to be crazy. How does it go to the drive-in from here? And then it kind of, you know, does a lot of talking, And then they go to the drive-in, and once you really establish that story of the drive-in, I mean, there's some interesting stuff, but the drive-in is established. I mean, it's kind of weird because of all the tow trucks, like the tow trucks keep towing in new vehicles. And one of the tow trucks that tows in the new vehicles is like, looks exactly like his brother's tow truck. And I'm like, dude, why is his brother not towing cars into here? Because he needs the money too. That's kind of what the fuck. But there's not a lot to me of really stand up what the fuck moments, because the movie is consistently good in its own way. So I'm going to go with a 4.
Yeah, if this was to happen in real life, there would be a lot of what the fucks. I'd be looking at the guy with the mohawk. I go, what the fuck is up with that? I'm trapped in a drive-in. What the fuck is up with that? But within its own world of this movie, nothing makes you pause and think, why is that happening? Or was it a budget issue? Or is that just weird for weird sake? No, it's internal logic sort of makes it make sense. So I can't even go higher than a 2. Unbelievably low for a movie I actually really, really like.
Yeah, it's not strong in this category because it's a good movie. it's tough. There's a couple for me. I mean, there's a part in the beginning where he goes to the character after being, you know, the dude, the flamethrower almost gets him and he's chased off by the cops. And he goes back to his place where his mom is there with his mother's boyfriend. And his mother's boyfriend is a big dude and is working out. And he starts working out and he's like, I gotta bulk up. And then he goes and eats. And they're like, what are you trying to bulk up for? You're too skinny. You don't have the frame. You're always going to be small. And he's like, I'm fueling up. And he just keeps eating. And then
his brother?
I thought it was his brother.
Yeah. Was that his brother? Okay, yeah. Whatever. I thought it was, no matter what.
It could be both. That makes a WTF.
Yeah, I'll go up to a 3 for that.
Well, it just keeps on though. I'm fueling up. And then like, you're going to be skinny. I'm fueling up. And they did it like 4 times. He said it. And I'm like, I get it. There's also the bit where, and it's worth noting also, I mean, the character, he's small, he's wiry. And I mean, he's just a young guy. He's supposed to be 20 in the movie. So the actor, Ned Manning, when he was cast, he told them he was 24. He was actually 36 at the time. So he got cast because he told Brian Trenchard-Smith he was 24 when he was 36. And I think when you look at him, he does not look 20. 36 looks pretty accurate. The fact that they fell for that, that's kind of WTF, though that's not really in the movie. The only really thing that to me stuck out, though, is a major WTF is like when they get there and they realize that they're like they wake up the morning after they've been, you know, their wheels have been taken from them, and they wake up and they look out and they're finally really in the daylight now because, you know, obviously nighttime at the drive-in. They see all the different characters and the look and the design. And at one point they could get a close-up on one character and he turns to them and he opens his mouth and he allows this like tiger roar for no reason with nothing else in the movie. That's the only strong WTF for me I found in the entire film. The concept's kind of 2. I wish I could go higher. I like the film.
Well, I mean, these ratings are not about liking it, unfortunately.
Ultimate movie.
And you know, as we're talking about, like, you know, the subtext and the symbolism and that, it's every one of those things takes away from the what the fuck of it. So I'm only going with a 1 on this. I really didn't think there was a whole lot of stuff that was outside of the world of the film. I think that the only thing that indicates it's the future is one poster for Rambo 8.
Yeah. Rambo takes Russia. I love it.
Rambo takes Russia. But that's the only indicator that it's the future. So 1 for me on that. Memorable moments.
I mean, this one's interesting. Like, there's no doubt that I'm not going to forget watching it. I'm not going to forget the look of the drive-in, the concept behind the movie. I mean, there's like, I'm not going to pull lines out or anything like that. And it's not going to be a big kind of thing that I can really talk about a lot. But at the same time, I'm not going to forget it. I mean, it's a solid movie. I don't think it's an easy watch, but I'm glad I watched it. So I'm going to go with 7.
Yeah, this movie has actually stuck with me for years. It's one of the ones that I've wanted to get on the podcast for quite a while. I've searched it out on DVD. Every time I see it anywhere, I end up watching it because I remember liking it so much. So yeah, it's stuck with me. And I end up thinking about, like, what the hell was the actual point they were trying to get across? Because they hit it so hard, yet I still don't know quite what they were saying. Was it 80s consumerism? I don't know. I don't know. Just when the question's a little bit open like that, I can't leave it alone. So I'll go as high as an 8 on this one. It is stuck like glue to me anyway.
The character design, like just kind of the design of the world, it leaves an image in my mind, but not like fully formed. I just kind of have a memory of that it was really kind of neat. You know, there's the explosions and the different things in the climax, and I sort of remember it. The stunt at the end. That truck went 163 feet, and that was a world record at the time. And I remember it was cool. But I don't really remember the details. Like, it's amazing to me how I like this film, but it's not super. It didn't make a super impact in my memory, so I can't give it more than a 4.
I'll come down in the middle. I mean, I think I still want to rattle through what like the message of the film, because I do think that, you know, sometimes we overthink these movies, but I think there's still something there that we haven't quite teased out. But only a 6 for me. Crazy concept.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting movie. I mean, like, I would never consider. I mean, I certainly haven't seen it like a welfare state in a drive-in before, and so that definitely has to give it points. The fact that it's based off a story is certainly worth it. Overall, I'm gonna come in pretty high, probably 7.
Yeah, if you're asking for money for this movie, and you show them a short story about people trapped in the drive-in, I don't think a lot of people are going to go, yeah, that's a movie. Yeah, this to me, and this is probably the reason it stuck with me for so long, is an absolutely bizarre concept. I'll go up to a 9 on this.
I like it, but I'm not scoring on how much I liked it. I'm scoring it on kind of the podcast, and I got a 3 on this. It's exploitation. It's just exploitation. It's just in the wake of Mad Max, and that's all it is. The fact that they try to put in a little bit more in there, but it's completely exploitation and then completely Mad Max influence. So I'm unfortunately giving it such a low score.
See, that's the post-apocalyptic part, but. I mean,
it's an Australian movie, the post-apocalyptic part.
Yeah, and it's based on a short story. They're trapped in a drive-in, man. Something you can't get trapped in. They're trapped in a goddamn field.
Yeah, unfortunately, they could have used anything. It just happened to be a drive-in. It's yeah. No, 3.
One of the things that. Or sorry, but one of the things that I'll say is that they have one of the movies that they play is Turkey Shoot, which is another husploitation movie, which would score much better on the Boogaloo scale.
It's also Brian Trenchard Smith, and the scene that they show from that from Turkey Shoot is the scene with the head exploding that caused that movie to get an R rating in America, but this movie was rated, showed that scene and is rated PG.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. I like that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Just forever showing that the MPAA is full of shit. They don't rate things on objective quality either.
They do not. No.
I'm also not going high on this. I think it needed like one more thing. The beginning of it's very Mad Max, like with the wreckers and everything, and then there's all that. Like, they go to the drive-in, and it's a whole lot of the same thing for the rest of the movie. So only 4 for me.
Did I give it a 3? I'm going to up it to a 4. I think that's more fair.
And at a lovely 88 minutes. It does not get either a time modifier, which leaves it with a final total of 55 out of 100, putting it only half a point back from Skidoo.
There we go.
Skidoo.
The only thing that matters is with who.
That's right.
Skidoo. The only thing that matters is with who.
Yeah, again, like there's one that should go back to a 10 out of 10.
That is a memorable moment for Dan. I will never forget that. Yeah.
Nope, it's impossible to
forget. Yeah, again, if
that, but adding it, her strip down to the. I mean,
yeah, work. you're reminded because it's your ringtone, though, Jack.
Well, it's my ringtone, but funny enough, it's me singing it.
As Carol Channing. All right. Well, Dead End Drive-In. See, once again, we have a movie where we begin talking about the movie that it's close to on the Octagon.
Thank you. Do I mean in the sky? Sorry.
All right. Let's do some business, please. Business.
All right. Please subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and on your favorite podcast app or apps. You can subscribe to a whole bunch of places. Like, you know, have it ready at the touch of a button at all times. Carry them on you. Please make sure every device has it. If we're on Spotify, you know, give that a shot. We are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com. That is the home of the Octagon, where you can find the record of our ongoing search. As well, WeTalkPodcast.com has a Facebook and they have a Twitter that you can keep up with what we're up to, as well as all of our brother and sister podcasts. And we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
And be warned, most of the other shows are much longer than this one.
Yeah, we're the bite-sized podcast.
No, I mean this episode. Most of our other episodes are much longer than this one.
Yeah. We've done well so far with this season. And speaking of this season, season 13, Days of Future Past, well, we carry on to 2020 Texas Gladiators. So that sounds like it should be some fun and hopefully just a little bit more boogaloo than Dead End Drive-In was. So does anybody have anything else to say before we check on out of the drive-in?
I like that it was in a drive-in. I miss drive-ins. I hear they're a thing again.
Yeah.
You know the fun. Here's another good piece of trivia about this movie and the drive-in. That drive-in was shut down the year before, and that movie, Brian Trenchard Smith saw Sam one of Sam Peckinpah's Peckinpah's movie, Major Dundee, in that theater as the drive-in. Oh, wow. When he was young, before getting there. So it's kind of cool. Kind of cool. A full circle thing.
All right. Yeah. Great. Well, we'll go for a full circle next movie. So, for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, I'm your host, 8th Dan Stanadoo, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Here now the news for July 4th, 1995. In the wake of widespread economic collapse, officials are reporting massive general strikes.
In the 1970s, there was Clockwork Orange. Then in the 1980s came Mad Max and the Road Warrior. Now comes a startling new vision that takes you into the apocalypse and beyond. Back to the old drive-in you used to know and love. Only now, when the show is over, there is no way out. Dead End Drive-In.
Right now.
Not getting through to you, am I, son? No cabs, no buses, no transport. So, you're here. What to do with you? Government. This is your home.
You can't tell me they don't want to get out. Now.
Yeah, but they know they can't, son. There's no future. No future.
Come with me.
God, Jimmy, can't you see? This is all we've got.
Get out of here. And don't you try and stop me again.
Now get out of the way! Hey!
Welcome to your future, like it or not. Dead End Drive-In.